Hi, welcome to another episode of Inside Golden State Politics. I'm Bill Boyarsky, former city editor and columnist for the Los Angeles Times.
And I'm Sherry Bevich Jeffy, political analyst and self-styled media maven, coming to you finally, irrevocably, from a state of utter disbelief that our country is where it is, medically, economically, socially, and oh boy, politically. I am officially numb, frustrated, and I have to admit, a bit fearful right now, not to mention totally exhausted. But enough of my whining. I just want to let you know that's
where I am. Well,
you
know, last night I was Zooming with a friend of mine who's a particularly pessimistic fellow. And we were talking about the possibility of Trump canceling the election, taking over the country, and installing a police state. But I'd say that's sort of a gloomy view of the world. I like the old song, Look on the Sunny Side of Life. And one of the events was the appointment by President-elect Biden. And you don't mind if I call him president-elect, no.
Not at all. That's what it is. Remember, the rule is, if we say it so, it's true.
Well, I think that's true. That's our motto, and it's also the motto of Fox News.
And Donald Trump, unfortunately.
The appointment of California's Attorney General, Javier Becerra, to be Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, an incredibly important and hard job. He's going to be in charge, basically, of pandemic relief, of Obamacare, of all kinds of important social functions of the government. It's a high-pressure job. He's going to go in for a tough confirmation fight in the Senate. So what do you think of that?
Well, I have to tell you, Bill, a friend of mine in Washington called me well before the nomination was public and said, Biden's going to appoint Javier Becerra as the Secretary of Health and Human Services. And I said, oh, no, he's not. You're wrong. He's being considered for Attorney General. What does he have that qualifies him to become Secretary of Health and Human Services? Well, I've changed my mind. Thinking more about it, reading more about it. Remember, he was the leader in, well, first of all, while he was in Congress, he helped craft the Affordable Care Act. He was a member of the Ways and Means Committee and the Subcommittee on Health. From the day he stepped into office after being appointed by Jerry Brown to fill the term of one Kamala Harris, who was elected to the Senate, he became a major critic of, an opponent of, President Donald Trump. He fought for the Affordable Care Act. He's sued the Trump administration, I guess, over 100 times by now. Here's what he brings, and I think it's interesting, given this highly polarized time and what it means to the new administration and to fighting the pandemic. Javier Becerra is a manager. He managed the second largest Department of Justice in the country. He knows what's in the Affordable Care Act. He's defended the Affordable Care Act. He knows Washington. And what Biden did was place around Becerra really high quality scientists and medical experts. And what Becerra lacks in hands-on medical expertise, he's got all around him, including his wife, who is an obstetrician, who specializes in hard pregnancy. I kind of think, given his political success while he was in Congress, while he was Attorney General, given his tools, I think Becerra is a good choice. I've come to that conclusion. And he is a Latino. And he has been important in defending the Dreamers. I mean, it's a very good political choice, and I think it makes sense administratively.
You know, I think of him as I think of his life. I think of Becerra as a real Californian,
real
new Californian.
You're right.
His father, his parents came from Mexico. He grew up in Sacramento. He went to a public high school, C.K. McClatchy High. He grew up in a middle-class family, what he thought was a middle-class family.
Until he went to Stanford.
He said his mother, when his mother drove him to Palo Alto to go to Stanford, and he looked around Palo Alto, he said, I thought I was middle-class, but he looked at all these mansions and realized, my God. And he went to Stanford Law, and he worked his way up, and he was elected to the state assembly and then to Congress. You know what he has through all that experience? He has something that's really important to his new job if he's confirmed by the Senate, and that is political skills. The ability to deal with Republicans and Democrats, the need to compromise, the idea of setting goals and attaining them, but not quitting if you don't get everything you want, the ability to work with Republicans, and he has worked with Republicans and Democrats in Congress. So those are the skills. What he really needs is somebody really good to run the vaccination program.
Well, that's what I said. He got the experts around him, solid, scientifically based experts. I mean, there's Dr. Fauci right back in the White House, and a lot of people really heaved a sigh of relief when that appointment was made.
I think he also needs somebody to run a strong communications department.
Everybody in politics does.
But he does in particular, because so many people are anti-vax and they're afraid of the thing. You're going to have a lot of people out there selling the idea of vaccinations and doing it with the knowledge that any screw up, any snafu, any glitch is going to be magnified out of proportion, possibly, by the press. It's a minefield. But I think that's a good reason for him having all this congressional experience. He certainly knows minefields.
Yeah, and he's been a good user of the media while he has been attorney general. He's built a national reputation, and he's built a lot of it not only through his opposition to Trump, but through his savvy use of the media. So I think, again, I think that he makes a very good choice. And I'm not one of those people who insists that the person who heads the Department of Health and Human Services must be a physician, must be a scientist. A politician is only as good and as effective as his or her staff is. And so far, at least, he's got a lot of good people surrounding him. And I think that's so important. And we do have to remember that he is the first Latino to hold this very important position. And that means a lot.
That means this is history. You know, offers an opportunity or a chance for disaster to Governor Gavin Newsom. He has to appoint a replacement for Becerra if Becerra is confirmed. That's an appointment. He has to appoint a replacement for the new vice president designate, Senator Kamala Harris. That's another appointment. Does he have any others?
Well, he might if Secretary of State Alex Padilla is appointed to fill the seat of senator. This is sounding like the Queen's Gambit. It's a chess game. But if Padilla fills Harris's Senate seat, that will leave the Secretary of State's office open, and that could be another Gavin Newsom appointment if that seat is open. I mean, this may have delivered Gavin Newsom. He may have 1, 2, 3 appointments, and he can dole them out to the various Democratic constituencies. Here's what I heard.
Discussion on that Senate replacement. I mean, there's going to be the Secretary of State, Alex Padilla, who is the choice of Latino activists and political players. And then there's going to be Representative Karen Bass, who's an African-American, and she's possibility.
Well, here's what I think, more yes. That, yeah, Padilla moves out. Karen Bass becomes Secretary of State. She cannot be Attorney General. She is not a lawyer, and this is the office in which you must be a member of the bar for at least 5 years in California in order to be Attorney General. So that leaves the chess piece of the Attorney General. I wonder whom. Maybe Adam Schiff, but I don't know why he'd want to leave his position in Congress to become Attorney General. But
well, I don't know why Karen Bass would want to leave being a member of Congress to become Secretary of State.
Why not? I mean, people have done it before.
It's one of those jobs that, if you're lucky, it's a step-up job like Padilla's finding it. But
of course,
actually, it's sort of a boring job compared to being a member of Congress.
Ask Jerry Brown what you can do with the job of Secretary of State. If you can do it, you will do it. I'm just saying that's a possibility. It will be very interesting to see if indeed Newsom moves with a Black woman to the Senate. And Karen Bass has been very strong and very articulate in arguing for a woman of color in that Senate seat, not necessarily her, but the arguments that she makes that the Democrats will be without a Black woman in the Senate, that there needs to be more women of color in the Senate, are pretty powerful arguments, particularly in a state that is so dramatically blue. And I think we'll have to see what happens. We can make it bad.
So dramatically blue and so multi-ethnic. You know, when I'm watching television, addicted to cable news as I am, I get mad every day over an entirely different matter.
Uh-oh.
You know, all around us, there are people who rent subsidies are going to end at the end of the month, people whose unemployment is going to end at the end of the month. The misery that is going to be handed to us, and we're already having a lot of misery, is incalculable. And that's because that's because the Democrats and the Republicans in Congress are so bullheaded and stupid that they cannot agree on a simple bill.
It ain't simple.
To extend the relief, the COVID epidemic relief bill.
Yeah.
It's stuck in the Senate. God knows where it is in the House.
Well, the Heroes Bill had been passed, but that's dead.
Pelosi has become like this incredible political game player.
Wow.
Schumer is, if he ever had the golden touch, has lost it. Of course, Moscow Mitch is determined to have the Democrats lose at anything. And you have about 6 or 7 moderate lawmakers of both parties trying to put something together and people laughing at them because they're irrelevant.
Well,
I mean,
not so
have
much
you
anymore.
Ever been more mad at Congress?
Yeah. Yeah. But let me tell you something. The closer, I think... I wonder, too, where are the hearts and the minds of our leaders in Congress to even think of allowing this to happen? The eviction moratorium gone. that's going to create a real problem, certainly in LA County and California, with regard to the homeless. The rent, stop it, gone. No unemployment. I mean, it is horrific to think of the millions upon millions of people who are going to be in even worse shape than they are now. But we're getting to the point where that horrible vision could well become a reality, and people could get really mad at their elected officials. And I think horribly, the closer we get to that horrible, horrible deadline, the more likely it is that Capitol Hill will begin to focus on the problem. And I believe that the polarization and the ego cuteness are so great up there that the only way there's going to be real movement is for the public to articulate how angry they are, healthfully, meaningfully, to push and pressure their elected officials to move.
You know something, you got to blame the news media for this, a lot
for
of
all
it.
All of it?
You got to blame the news media for not pointing out specifically how our local problems in Los Angeles, in Los Angeles County, Southern California, and the rest of the state are intimately connected to what's happening in Washington.
Exactly.
If you read the stories, there's always a paragraph at the bottom saying, talking about federal aid. No, idiot. You're not talking about federal aid. You're talking about the relief package that's stalled in Congress. Now, because it's stalled in Congress, there's going to be what is that, Sherry? There's a whole section in there, aid to local government.
Aid to state and local governments. And the Democrats want it. And the Republicans find it anathema. Why? Politically, we know that particularly with regard to cities in urban areas, which are really slighted in the new proposal, they're generally Democratic. What a coincidence, huh? And the states, they do have Republican governors, but the national Republicans and Trump are getting more and more angry at them because the governors are being more and more realistic about this.
You know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see stories that relate, connect the layoffs in the, like, for example, the Los Angeles departments, particularly the police department, that connect those threatened layoffs to what's happening in Washington. I mean, there is a direct connection. And if the media doesn't point that out, no one will know. Because if you read the stories now, you don't have a sense of that. I want stories that directly connect homelessness and the threat of more homelessness to the failure to agree on eviction bans in Washington. There is this direct connection, and I guess as a ex-editor, that's what sets me screaming. Why isn't that in the news? Why isn't
that? That was the question I want to ask you. Why doesn't the media give a better an explanation of the symbiosis between the problems on the local and state level and the jacking around that's going on Capitol Hill? I mean, I can't comprehend it. I mean, I can comprehend it, but I have to believe somebody has to remember that these guys and women were elected, should have been elected to serve the public good. This isn't serving the public good.
No, it's not. Well, I've always, people ask me why the news media makes these mistakes or leaves this out or leaves that out. And people have made a good living analyzing these for scholarly journals. Well, they don't make a good living, but they
no, they don't.
they get paid a pittance for analyzing them for scholarly journalism journals.
Tell me about it.
And I think, you know, I'll tell you, the answer is really, it ranges from denseness, mental denseness, to stupidity. And a lot of what you see in the a lot of what you see in the media, a lot of what's left out, a lot of things they miss is just that they're acting dumb or they're too rushed or they're just dense.
Wait a minute though. Here let me add something to that. I mean, you're partially right anyway, but a communication, as we've talked a long time about, is a two-way street. Governors and mayors have to teach the media what's going on, have to teach their citizens what is going on, and citizens have to be articulate and confront the media with what is going on. Some of the media have done a fairly good job of focusing on individual stories and what this has done for a family or for a homeless person. But I don't think it's powerful enough at this point in time for the readers to dig deeply enough to understand how closely everybody is related to what is happening with regard to the pandemic, which is what is happening with regard to the economic recession and what needs to be done to bring us back. I think, you know, Joe Biden's been trying, but that's not enough. It's got to come directly from the affected areas to their elected officials and make it clear to the media. And I don't know, maybe we're just lazy. I keep thinking that might be the case.
Well, I don't know. The two leading spokespeople for are Governor Gavin Newsom and Mayor Eric Garcetti.
Correct.
And while they believe they're articulate, I think they're really not. Governor Newsom speaks not in riddles, but in some complex.
He's a policy wonk.
Techie talk that isn't even politics. It's like, I don't know what he's talking about. He had a 45-minute press conference earlier, and he went on and on forever, and it was unclear what he was talking about. You know, he really ought to go up to Colusa, get speech lessons from his predecessor, Jerry Brown, who made people mad, but he was direct. Well, he spoke in simple sentences.
His second time around, anyway, Jerry Brown 2.0 was a much better communicator, I think, than Jerry Brown 1.0.
And the mayor, Mayor Garcetti, he has a better command of the language than Governor Newsom does. In other words, he speaks in simpler sentences. They're more direct. But he won't get to the point either. He kind of dances around everything, very much afraid to offend anybody and to say the wrong thing. So as a result, you know, you don't get anything strong. You know, I'd like to hear him say, you know, we got a real mess with the LAPD. And one of the problems is we're not getting money from Washington because of the Congress's deadlock on the CARE extension bill. They're to blame.
I agree with you. And I think it also goes to your point about the need for a strong communications operation, because you can put part of the blame on the people around, both the mayor and the governor, who are the press operation, for not working the media to help their boss understand what he or she needs to do and help the media understand how critical it is that something gets passed as a relief package on the national level. I mean, you just can't say a person, this person, what horror. We are failing each other in communication, in the ability to work together, in the ability to trust. And that goes for elected officials. It goes for the media. It goes for every citizen in this country. And that's an awfully big problem to reconcile. That's why I'm so frustrated and a little bit fearful.
Do you think that that Americans, for the most part, would rather work together and get something done
today
than engage in this fruitless effort to give the president another term illegally?
Well,
I mean, don't you think that most people would be receptive to what President-elect Biden
no.
is saying? Let's
over a majority voted for him, so you have to say yes. But you need more than that. You need
what
more
do you need?
That. Pardon me?
What do you need?
How are we going to get there, Bill? Tell me, how are we going to get there? Look at what is going on. Look at the threats that are being made to elected officials and because they did their job and had a fair and open election. No, there's always...
Let's put blame where blame is due. President Trump is doing all he can...
Ain't the role model I would choose.
Inflame the electorate to... I see that he put his name on as an amicus, the latest lawsuit from Texas, which everybody says doesn't have much of a chance. He put his name on this brief that was written by this conservative lawyer in Orange County. Eastman, you know him?
Yeah, he's been around academia and politics more local, I think, than national.
See, that's what's inflaming people. And I felt that once Trump left office, he would sort of fade out. But I don't know. He's just inflaming people. And there are so many people willing to be inflamed that I think it is getting scary.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
And he's not going to disappear. I would think, maybe hope, that the media would pay far less attention to his little tricks, but he's going to be out there playing them. He certainly is. And my guess is the less attention that's paid to him, the louder and trickier he will become.
Yeah, I think so. Well, this is a rough time. I was telling my pessimistic friend I was talking to last night, who thinks the world is coming to an end. I said, well, you know,
I'm not far behind.
I said, you know, when Sherry and I do our podcast every week, I think that we're really commenting on recording an important part of American history, that what we're going through today is really important and is big. It will be like the people who were recording World War II. This will be remembered. And so I think in a sense, we're privileged to be able to, in our own small way, to be part of the commentary on this whole thing.
And in no small way, it allows us to let off steam. And for that, I am grateful to our listeners for allowing us to do exactly that. I think it's time.
It's time. Here's to you, Sherry.
Cheers.
We'll see you next week.